Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is brother Jay.
And this is Drew.
And in this episode, we are going to discuss the 2020 film, The Old Guard.
Yeah, we are. This is our second Gina Prince Bythewood movie.
What was the first one?
Beyond the Lights.
That was you and Eric?
Is that me and Eric or me and you?
Beyond the Lights.
The movie about the pop star and the cop.
Is that the one where Minnie Driver was the mother?
Yes.
That was the two of us.
Yeah, okay. I thought so.
Okay. My brain's coming back. Synapses don't fire so fast at this age, so... So, 2020, released in July of 2020. I assume this was just a Netflix release, maybe. Was it theatrical?
No, this was a pandemic special.
Charlize Theron plays Andy. Kiki Lane plays Niall. Matthias Schoenhartz plays Booker. Marwan Kenzari is Joe. Luca Marinelli is Nikki. Chiwetel Ejiofor, I hope I didn't slaughter that. He plays Copley. Was that even close?
I think that's real close. Okay. Ejiofor?
Yeah. Ejiofor? Okay. Chiwetel Ejiofor? I
don't know. Nice.
And Harry Melling is Merrick. So that's the kind of the main cast, although there's also an appearance by Veronica No as Quinn. And there's some other various characters, but that's the main core.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, I mean that's the moving parts. I had not seen this before last night. Had you?
Yes, I saw it when it first came out on Netflix. Back when we were all starved for content. this is my second time around. I was very excited when you shot me a text last night that said, this movie was not what you expected.
it was totally not what I expected. I actually thought this was a different movie.
Oh, did you figure out what movie you thought it was?
No, I don't. I'll have to go back and look. I suspect the movie that I thought it was is in my Netflix list to be watched. But I saw this, and it wasn't on my list. And I'm like, oh, I thought I put this on my list. And so that's why I thought, well, we should do this, because I looked at it at some point and thought, this is something that I might be interested in, right? Because it's kind of sci-fi-y, kind of action suspense-y, didn't look crazy, didn't look scary, right? So I was very interested in kind of seeing what the story was. But I went into it blind. I knew nothing about the universe. I didn't know that this was a series of either was it comics or graphic novels.
Yeah, I think it was comic books, but you can get them in like trade paperback form by now, I'm sure.
It got good reviews, decent reviews, and it got. Some good ratings, and it's already been greenlit for a sequel, according to sources online, but we all know how reliable that could be.
I think it was enormously successful for Netflix. I think it got tons of views. Like, it's one of their most watched movies ever.
They said I think it got 75 million views at one point.
That's crazy.
So that's a pretty big, I'm trying to find it. IMDb is so weird sometimes.
And who knows, you know, with, you know, Netflix meets out information only as they want. So who knows what you can really trust with the information around Netflix movies.
Yeah, especially because there's no budget information. There's no expenditure information. So we're not,
right.
I'm not sure. So one of the trivia that Netflix says, having been viewed by over 70 million households in its first month, this is one of Netflix's most successful releases. So that would not surprise me that they've already greenlit the sequel. And I guess that Charlize Theron made a point that when the movie first came out, people were asking if there was going to be a sequel, because I guess a lot of people were interested in it because they knew it was a serialized comic, right? Mm-hmm. So she said, well, we would all love to work together again, but we'll get there when we get there. Let's see how it goes, right?
Yeah, so. I think she produced this movie, right?
Sorry, I didn't hear your parting words.
I said, good luck and Godspeed. I hope everything's okay and that you return safely.
So we're off the rails. Off the rails. We're only, 6-7 minutes and we're already off the rails. My dog lately has started this thing where inexplicably he just starts growling and barking and all his hackles go up. But it's seemingly random to us. And it's not like he's looking out a window. He's just, yesterday he did it in the hallway at a wall.
Probably no big deal. It probably just have mice in your walls.
Today he did it, just now he was doing it in the hallway, which they have a long hallway that runs the entire length, almost the entire length of the house. And there's nothing. So
maybe he hates cows.
Well, it's pitch black outside, so I don't think the cows are out, but I think more likely he's developing cataracts and I think he's seeing things. Or perhaps not seeing things, but it's spooking him in the shadows and the light. And so he's just suddenly barking at things for no reason.
Oh no.
Or the house is haunted. I don't know. You know, who knows?
I'm going to go with mice.
Yeah. Well, this is the country, so we do have a mole, I believe. So that's going to be my next battle. But
I have officially deployed, since we're already off the rails, I've officially deployed a plank trap in my garage in Willow with water.
Okay.
I have not caught anything yet.
Wonder if the water keeps, I don't know. I was going to say, what if it keeps them from decomposing as fast, or if it makes them decompose faster? They all bloat up in water and grossness.
Whatever deters the other mice.
Do you think it will deter them?
I don't know. I don't know what their survival instincts are like. If they smell one of their dead brethren,
I would assume they would want to stay away. No, they eat each other if they die.
Not if they're like rotting, right?
Well, I don't know. I maybe I'm biased, but I don't assume they have the most discriminating of palates. So, but again, I'm no rodentia expert.
I don't know. So. Remy and Ratatouille had a pretty good palate.
Never seen it.
It's good. Yes, Charlize Theron was a producer on The Old Guard. So I'm really curious, what kind of movie did you think you were getting?
Well, so the movie that I thought I was watching, which was, this is clearer than the movie I thought I was watching was bodyguard woman and Haas's rescue child in the Middle East somewhere.
Oh, with Noomi Rapace?
Sure. I don't know. I don't know. That's what was in my head. So is that a movie? Then what I just described is actually a movie.
Yeah. Close. I'm guessing close. A female bodyguard is hired to protect an heiress on the run from assassins. That is a grade A tag synopsis description.
Yes, that's the movie that I thought I was watching.
Yeah. I'm in. I'm putting that on the list just based on that single line description. That's is right up my alley.
Yeah. So when I saw this, I thought that this was that movie. So I don't know. Welcome to my brain. I don't know why. I just assumed because I conflated Numi, or is it Rapace Rapace? I don't know what her name is. I conflated her with clearly Charlize Theron. So, which I don't know if that's insulting to either or flattering to either, but it was my intent to, it was respectful. I'll put it that way. So I went into this movie completely blind. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know it was a series. Didn't know the history, the backstory, didn't know any of that. But I gotta say, just cut to the chase, I loved this movie. This was great. This was a great movie.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was really fun. I mean, on some level, sort of have to grade it on the Netflix curve, right? Because they don't make super high budget movies. They sort of make that sort of mid tier. So this is a movie that's very big in concept, but it was pretty obviously done on a relatively modest budget. Like, they had really good action and some good set pieces, but a lot of it was it felt a little confined. Smaller sets for some of the extended sequences, for sure.
I thought that lent itself a lot to the story, though, that they were a very tight group.
Yeah, no, it's. I think they did a good job with it. And again, when it comes out, just drops. It feels like for free because Netflix is so ubiquitous at this point. Right in the middle of June 2020. I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine, because it certainly would have been a summer blockbuster.
I think so.
So I have to imagine that it would have been quite successful at the box office had it been in a movie theater, if those even exist in the future. So I was surprised by it. I was captivated by it. I liked the story. I liked that it moved. Of course, I hated the villain and wanted him dead immediately, but I think you're supposed to. So that was effective. And I didn't guess where the story was going. So that I wasn't able to skip to the end. I was constantly kind of, surprised is the wrong word, but I was kept in suspense enough that I didn't skip to any of the conclusions. It was almost always surprising.
Well, it's both like really kind of shallow and popcorny, but it also has some really deep, dark concepts.
It really does. Yeah, it addresses quite a few interesting historical conundrums.
Yeah, and just the concept, I'd never seen this before. The really exploration of what it would be like to not die, not ever die, but still experience death and pain.
Well, and the one point that I wrote down is which the character Booker makes later in the movie, that you know, you get to watch everybody you love die, you outlive them all.
Mm-hmm.
Which to me would be probably the worst thing ever.
Right, and that's why they only hang out with each other, right?
Right. I mean, I've survived people thus far, and I've survived plenty of dogs in my lifetime, and that's been brutal just as it is. I can't imagine having the knowledge that I would surpass all of my family and leave them behind. I don't even know how you would reconcile that in your brain, right? It would be painful. It's just a painful contemplation, even just like thinking about it. It's like, it's very deep. It's very, very, it's very cerebral and not pleasant. So it would lend itself to driving one insane, I would believe. So.
Yeah. But, the concept of doing medical experiments on someone who can't die, that's really dark. The concept of drowning somebody who keeps coming back.
It was. It had some very disturbing parts. I had expected. So the point, we're skipping all over the place. So we're meandering. But at the point where they put Quinn in the big black metal box.
Mm-hmm.
It looked creepy, by the way, which I suppose it was meant to. But also, I had expected that it was going to be like a chimney where they were going to set her on fire inside of it. Because they threatened fire, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were going to end up burning Andy.
There's a lot of unanswered questions, which I don't know that they'll ever get answered. But there's a lot of stuff that was just kind of left hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did Andy get away?
Yeah, didn't matter.
Yeah, so that's fine.
It has a really good opening.
It doesn't. I didn't feel any of this movie was slack or unnecessary. There wasn't anything that could have been easily cut, I don't believe.
Nope, I agree.
Let's see.
But I do like the opening, because the opening is where they all die, and you start with Charlize Theron narration.
Yeah.
And then we come back to that scene later when we find out that they can't die, which must have been a really fun reveal if you did not know what you were in for.
Well, again, when the movie starts with them all dead, I was freaking out. Because, first of all, I didn't realize it was supernatural, superhero kind of movie. So when they start as dead, I thought, oh, this is the end of the movie in the beginning. Oh, this is what I'm in for. This is going to be rough. Because going into it thinking everybody's dead, oh, that's going to be a different kind of movie than I had expected. But I was obviously pleasantly surprised. So the film starts with the four main characters that you're introduced so far. Andy, Booker.
Joe and Luca, right?
Joe and Nikki.
Nikki is played by Luca Marinelli.
Right. Gotcha. So Andy Booker, Joe and Nikki are all, they're dead. They're on the ground, bullet holes, eyes open, not blinking.
Lots of bullet holes.
Lots of bullet holes and blood. So, and you hear Andy's voice, saying that she's tired of this, as in she doesn't know if this is going to be the time she doesn't wake up.
Right.
So then I thought, well, this is like, is that the Tom Cruise with the Day After Tomorrow movie or whatever? I thought, all right, this is not the movie I thought it was. And then we flash to Morocco, where Andy is meeting with Booker in an alley, and she goes to rendezvous with Booker and Andy go to rendezvous with Joe and Nikki in some kind of safe house apartment thing. And you kind of notice right off the bat that she's kind of not comfortable with everybody watching her, because she realizes somebody's taking a selfie in the background and they capture her. So she's cunning enough to offer to take a picture for them and then delete the selfie with her in it.
Right.
Which is, that's some good reconnaissance work there.
Yeah. Excellent spycraft.
Right.
Right off the bat.
So they're all kind of in this safe house. They're talking. They have a bet over some ingredients and or origin of baklava, I guess, which mm-hmm. must be a thing in the comics or something. But
Yeah, and the this what this quartet they all have really good chemistry. You know, they did a good job of making it seem like they had known each other forever.
They had a really good rapport. You're right. They all seemed very they seemed like a family.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed close and congenial and all those things you would want as a family, right? Especially yeah. somebody who's working to protect each other.
Yeah, because like you noticed when she's just kind of out in the world and making her way, she's very cold and guarded. But when she gets alone with them, she's like very warm and happy. And you know, even though she's still experiencing some trepidation about what they're doing, it's obvious that she's glad to see everybody.
She has some different modes. Mm-hmm. One is get shit done mode, and the other is family joke around mode. Not a lot of in between, though.
No, but she also has a I'm gonna kill every motherfucker in the room mode.
That's the get shit done mode.
Yeah, so, sort of another level of that, but yeah.
So she is the team is approached. Originally, the team is approached through Booker by Copley, who has a hostage situation in the Sudan that he wants help with. And they've apparently worked with Copley before. I think that was the implication.
Yes.
Because she says, Andy says, we don't do repeat business. This is a rule. This is a rule on purpose. Yep. So, no. And Booker convinces her and says, let's go listen. And then you can decide. But there's no harm in listening. Let's go listen, right? So Andy and Booker go and meet Copley in some kind of sidewalk cafe. And Joe and Nikki are in there. Was that barking on your side?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Sorry. So Joe and Nikki are covertly watching, although it's pretty overt, because later Copley very quickly...
Yeah, my dog's just a jerk. He saw somebody's unloading like a little skid steer with a plow on it outside.
Well, it's winter, right?
Yeah, and my dog hates seeing anybody near our house.
Well, to be fair, I hate seeing anybody near my house, so I can understand.
Yes, but I only lose my shit on the inside.
Oh, well, I haven't cultivated that skill, but I digress. So they're at the cafe. Copley is giving the hard sell to Andy and Booker, although Booker is already on board. He's really trying to convince Andy. There's a hostage situation in Sudan. He wants them to go in and rescue the kids. It's discussed that Copley used to work for the CIA, but he moved to London, and there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of kind of backstory maybe that he doesn't go into, but he kind of reveals a little. And money's not discussed because she just says, we'll invoice you. Like, don't worry about money. We'll charge you what we're going to charge you.
Yeah, and I think the implication is that they try and they're attempting to be do-gooders, right? Go around the globe. Just doing good stuff, but she's very frustrated because she doesn't see the world getting any better.
And then we see them in a helicopter flying to the South Sudan. And so you see all of them kind of communicating wordlessly on the helicopter back and forth. So clearly they have some kind of camaraderie where they have developed their own communication method without needing to speak, which is, that's a useful skill as a team, I would think. So they...
And it's just the four of them. I mean, it's not like they are the leaders of a bigger group. It is just the four of them going into enemy territory.
And they're not really ruggedly prepared. They're not a lot of gear is coming with them.
Right.
Not as much as I would have expected.
And so, big hand-to-hand weapons.
Yeah. A very impressive hand-to-hand weapon at one point.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing I've ever seen, actually.
And Andy's axe?
Oh, yeah. I want one.
She knows how to use it.
I want one so I can go chop wood with that. That's what I want for my backyard now. I don't even have wood that I would chop, but I might buy some just so I could split wood with that. It'd probably kill me. It would probably break my shoulder or something. But anyway, digress. They walk around the camp and they kind of survey, and they're not shy about killing people. There is no reticence to murder people. Now, ostensibly, they're murdering bad guys, so... But then you have to think, does this make them good people, or does this make them morally lawful but questionable? There's all this kind of simmering confusion on the surface about who they are as a group, from my perspective. But seemingly they're murdering bad guys, and so... Assumption at this point, they're not terrible people, and they're trying to rescue supposedly a bunch of hostage kids, so we'll go with it, they're good people. Right. They take out some of the guards, they rush the camp, they have that's a pretty good fight scene where they take out in different methods all of the people guards around the camp. Some with knives, some with guns, some with hand-to-hand, some with other weapons. But they pretty much devastate everybody. They walk to where the children are supposed to be, and they see the pile of shoes, which is all piled up, which is a macabre kind of effigy, I would guess.
Super creepy.
Well, I would say it's almost concentration camp like in its representation. That's what I went to when I saw it. It gave me that kind of apprehension, like they were walking into some kind of, you know, poison room. But they make it into the room by blasting through the door. They make it down some stairs. They look around. There's no children in the room. And Andy notices that there's some cameras in the corner, and she's like, oh, shit. And that's when the dudes walk out of the corners with lots of guns, bullets, 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 and they're all dead on the floor. Pretty much within just seconds.
Yep.
And none of them resist. None of them, they all just go down. There's no attempt to, they don't seemingly offer any resistance, or from this point in the movie, they've just given their lives. And I thought, well, where is this movie going to go from here? If they're all dead, I don't understand. So I thought...
They were ambushed and vastly outgunned.
Oh, right. I mean, they were going to be just... Yeah. Full of holes. But then, as you do, I suppose, the attackers just kind of stand back as everybody's dead, and they're congregating and discussing whatever you discuss after you just killed four people in a group in a big firefight. And you slowly see the four, Andy, Booker, Joe, and Nikki, reanimate as the bullets pop out of their orifices and the wounds heal up.
Yep. It's a great moment. It's a great moment.
It was a little gross, a little disturbing for me. I don't like stuff like that usually. It's hard gore I don't do good with. So it was effective. I thought, oh, okay, this is where this movie's going. And they all animate, and that's when the ass kicking begins, and they murder everybody. The four of them murder all of the people that tried, well, I guess. Is it murder if they didn't die? They did die, but they reanimated. So there's so many.
I think they get credit for murder.
Okay, so the murderers get murdered.
Yeah, and all of the action in this movie is great. Even the small stuff, like the fight in the airplane later. But I really love this gun kata stuff that they're doing here, because they're using their very antique looking hand-to-hand weapons in concert with their firearms, and it's really well done. It's very effective.
Yeah, they mix their skills for either confusion factor or who knows. But it's an effective slaughter method.
They are very good at what they do.
They are very good at what they do. They have a very high success rate from the looks of it. Andy destroys the camera at the end, and they realize they've been set up, and so now they're like, well, you gotta go find Copley. And so they book it out of town. They buried all of their clothes, it looked like.
Yes.
I don't understand what the symbolism of that was, but whatever. Maybe because it had bullet holes in it. I don't know. So, but then they are all on a train car, which we then switch to Afghanistan, and we see an entirely different scene, different setting, different people, a whole bunch of Marines wandering around in a village in Afghanistan. And we see Niall Freeman, played by Kiki Lane. She's in a team of people who are searching for somebody, searching for some nefarious character because he's a bad guy and he's killed people. And so the Marines are looking for him. And she speaks Pashto, which is apparently the language that this village speaks. So, you know, she is working with a group of the villagers to kind of convince them that it's okay to talk. And she kind of negotiates with them. And they say, no, he's not here, except they point to where he is. So they get the villagers get what's going on. And so Niall's Marine team congregates and tries to take out the bad guy. The bad guy shoots. They rush him. They shoot him a couple times, and he goes down. Basically, he's about to die, they think. And Niall goes to help him, says, call for a medic. And as she's being distracted, he rears up with some kind of bladed weapon and slices her neck open, and she pretty much bleeds out and dies.
And this was very gory and shocking, even though we just went through like just this scene of carnage, with the group of the immortals, that was like very dark and stylized. And then we cut to, this scene in Afghanistan. It's very bright. It's daylight. It's very bright and a little antiseptic. Then just have her throat cut open was very jarring.
It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. It was such a tonal shift that it set me on edge because I didn't know where the movie was going. At this point, I was really confused because these are two very separate stories and I had no idea what's going on now. I'm totally out of my wits. I'm trying to track everything, and now she's dead, but and brutally dead, like, not just a little, but you're right. I mean, it was massive, and you see her die, and it takes a while. She doesn't die quickly, which seemed pretty, I mean, it was rough to watch, except that then we flash forward a little bit, and she's waking up in the field hospital.
Yep.
After she's had this strange nightmare of seeing other people. And as we flip to our team of four, Andy, Booker, Joe, and Nikki, who are on the train, and they are seeing parts of her. And so they all have this common, I would say it's a common dream, but they're not all dreaming the same thing. They're dreaming similar elements. They all get kind of bits and pieces.
Yeah, they're all dreaming about each other.
The four of them are jarred awake by this nightmare, except it's not a nightmare. It's a vision. I guess it's a not really a premonition. I'm not sure what you would call it. But there was a bunch of images, mental images that were shared, and they all got different pieces of it. And this is apparently a phenomenon that they're all familiar with because they all start piecing together as a team, interjecting parts so they can get a cohesive picture of what is actually happening. And they determine that this is somebody new to the group. So this has happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And
but not for a while.
It's been a while. And they don't know how it happens or why, but this has happened. And so Andy says, I'm the leader. I'm the team leader, which she says a couple times. I think the implication that she makes is that she's the oldest of the group. So because of that, she's the team leader. And she says, you guys continue on to go find Copley because we're going to get his ass. But I'm going to go get this Niall Freeman person or whatever. I don't know if they fully identified her at that point or not, but they knew who she was by they had a picture of her, but they weren't sure all of the details. So Andy hops out of the train and skitters across the desert to find Niall in Afghanistan as the rest of the team head to London to go find Copley.
They went to Paris.
Oh, right. Sorry. They went to the safe house in Paris.
Yeah.
Because they were set up and they were going to have to find where Copley was. That's right. You're right. Back at the Afghani camp, Niall is pretty much shunned by her entire crew. They see that she's not only recovered, which they're convinced she was dead, but she has no mark at all of where the blade sliced her neck open and she died from.
Yeah, they are not okay with the fact that she is recovered.
Recovered with nothing. No effect. And she makes up an excuse about how she had a skin graft. And I think you see the nurse roll her eyes in the tent.
Right.
But doesn't contradict her, just lets it go. But it's clear that Niall is kind of on the outside now. She's not trusted. And I think there's a fear of her, perhaps, but it's hard to tell. You never really get in depth with that. And Niall's commanding officer comes and says, you're going to go. And I think to Germany is where he's going to send her. You're going to go for some research. So we're not sure what's going on. And we all thought you were dead and here your dog tags back because, well, we didn't think you were going to need him. Then we see, we switch to London where Copley is with a presentation ongoing from Merrick of Merrick Pharmaceutical Industries, big pharma, crazy guy, right? And he's talking about how they have extended life through cancer drugs. They've extended life through telomere research, which is a real thing, by the way. Telomeres are a real thing. So
what are they?
So I know very little about them. What I do know is that they are responsible for one of the signals that tells your cells to die. And as your body system goes through your body processes, cells die in, you have cells that are created in. But at a certain point, more of them are dying than are being created. And so that's what causes us to age and parts of our bodies to deteriorate and shut down over time. There's a signal that the body gives, and those telomeres trigger these events based on unknown factors. Medicine hasn't figured it out yet. The thinking is that if we can trick these telomeres into not sending out the signals, that we will basically not age as we are. It will extend life. It will extend cognition. The real problem will be that we will wear our bodies out. Our brains will function. Our mentality will sustain, but our body itself won't be physically able to sustain us because we'll wear out joints. We'll wear out, our bones will wear. So our bodies are not meant to live forever. They're just not designed like that. They don't constantly repair. That's why we end up with bad knees as we age, or you break a hip, or all those things, because certain things, just your bones need calcium, you get less calcium. So there's all process, right? So in theory, telomeres are one of the things that we can extend. If I understand correctly, this will be a way to keep mentality and cognition intact up until the point where the physical body can't maintain it anymore. As opposed to now, where we have people, the geriatric age of people reaches a point where cognition starts to fail, dementia sets in, and we have other complications that result in either mortality or substantial decline where people are no longer able to care for and eventually then perish. So
then we can just transfer our consciousness to a 1970s era supercomputer?
I guess. I don't even know how that will work, but I'm sure, you know, by the, in the future, maybe that'll be a thing. Or we'll have cyborg bodies where they can just put your brain into it.
Right on.
How long will the brain survive? I mean, I at some point there has to be I'm speculating, I don't know, but I would think that at some point there's going to be a finality where your brain just can't keep going. And then the question is, can your brain continue capacity just to keep storing things? Can it store memories and keep creating memories and storing them? And what do you lose in that process? Because I look back and I can remember things when I was 6 years old, but I can't remember last week.
Yeah, there's lots of shit stored in my brain right now that I don't need.
Well, that's the joke. I tell people, like, I remember our first phone number in Alaska. I still to this day don't know our mother's cell number, and I've dialed it plenty. I have to look it up. I mean, I know our old mailing address before we had the physical mailing address. Couldn't tell you yours or Eric's mailing address. I have it. I've sent things there plenty of times. Don't know it. I could drive there if I was in the city, but I couldn't tell you where it was. So the brain is a funny thing.
Yep.
And not unlike, you know, there's a Simpsons episode of, you know, if something else enters my brain, something is going to fall out. There's only so much space up there right now. So I have to prioritize what I'm going to remember and what I'm not. So anymore, I just write things down. And the problem is then I read them and I don't know what I've written. It's out of context. Like, oh, that's very interesting. I have no idea what it means, but apparently it was important enough for me to write down. So I'll just keep this note here. And maybe sometime I'll be like, oh, that's what that means. And more times than not, I never figured it out.
I'm impressed you write notes.
Have we met? You've seen me. I take all kinds of notes.
Yeah, I record nothing.
Well, again, after the car accident, my short-term memory is not... It takes a lot for me to write things into my RAM. So, after my little head bonking, it takes 6 or 7 times for me to commit things to memory. So I write a lot of shit down because sometimes things just escape into the vapor of nothingness. But I digress. So, telomeres. So, Merrick is giving his presentation and then... he's talking about how they want to extend people's lives and that's their future. That's the push. And he and Copley are in a car back to wherever. And he's discussing that Copley is confessing that there was a bit of a complication and all of the team was killed by the 4 that they were trying to capture.
It did not go according to plan.
No. And Copley, at this point, is trying to convince Merrick, but Merrick seems to be unimpressed and doesn't believe that this is really a thing. He believes everything that he sees on the footage is faked. He says, I'm not going to believe it until I see these people in the flesh, as it were.
Right.
So, just bring me them, but bring me all of them. Not just one, I want all of them. All of them need to be here. Because he's paranoid about his competitors getting a foothold in the market that doesn't exist yet. Or a jump on his research, maybe?
Yeah, and then Andy shows up and kidnaps her before she can be shipped off to Germany.
Right. Andy abducts her basically at the last minute, as she does, and starts driving her out to, we don't know where she's driving, out in the desert in a Humvee. Or Bradley, or whatever they are. Big armored vehicle in the desert. And now wakes up and escapes out the back using the old trunk release switch, which seems a little little suspect. Like, you'd have that just available in a war vehicle that you could just easily slip out the back. But whatever. Now falls out the back of the vehicle and Andy stops. But Andy doesn't seem at all concerned by this. Actually, it seems to be she was expecting this to happen, as if Niall would be a very petulant child about this. And Niall starts running away, and so she just shoots her in the head. Which, yep. again, jarring. It's a jarring change. It's such a tonal shift. Because they had a pretty good banter back and forth. She's in the vehicle. They're driving out. Seems to be fine. And then shoots her in the head and she's dead. Except
she shoots her and then she complains about how long it takes for baby immortals to come back.
The first few times take longer.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to take so long? So there's some back and forth. And is this where Niall stabs her?
Yes.
Niall's like, don't do that. Or I'm sorry, Andy's like, don't do that. Just come on. I can answer these questions. You're going to have lots of them. Trust me. You don't know what's going on. I've been around the block. Come on, let's go. We will explain, but let's go.
She says she's going to explain, but she does not do a great job.
Well, she says she has answers, but they're not necessarily to any of the questions that Niall has. She's got lots of answers, but nothing that Niall's interested in asking.
Right.
So they reach the airstrip with the Russian airplane, the Russian pilot and the plane, the drug running plane, I think is what it made out to be, right? And yes. Niall's like, I'm a Marine. I don't do this. This is a bad guy. We don't deal with bad people. Bad people are bad people. What are you doing? And this is, Andy has a great line where she says, sometimes you got to work with people you don't want to eat with.
Yes, that is a good line.
That's a good line. So they end up on the plane. Niall makes the quip, is this even safe? And Andy makes the quip back, does it matter?
It's a fair point.
Yeah, like, we don't die. What's the worst thing that can happen?
It seems like a plane crash would still suck.
Well, and this is where I start to have questions. So if their limbs are all distended and decapitated and whatnot, and they're in like 8 different pieces, do they regenerate from the head to the rest of their body?
Or do they suck back together like the T-1000?
Yeah, exactly. So how would that work? So I have many questions. You know, if you were put in like a wood chipper, you know, what would happen?
Well, if they had been able to spend more time in the Merrick laboratories, we'd probably have answers to all these questions.
So they take off in the plane after some back and forth, and Niall is not happy about this. She's clearly not happy that they're going to Paris. And Andy's like, you know what? Just be done with it. I'm going to get some sleep. You should get some sleep. Trust me. You're going to need some sleep. We're going to need to be rested. And Andy wakes up tied up. Fastened by a locking seatbelt, right?
Yeah, Niall is not willing to go quietly.
Nah.
She does not like being told what to do.
She's not on board with this so far. She's not happy. They're not happy by this. So Andy says, okay. And it's clear Andy's not surprised by anything at this point. She's pretty much nonplussed. She's just annoyed.
Yeah, she's like Robert Redford in Winter Soldier.
She's like, I had expected this. Whatever. And so the implication is that Niall is now held a gun at the Russian pilot and is making him land somewhere. I forget if she says where, but they're not going to Paris. And Andy says, yeah, well, we'll see about that. And then she shoots and kills the pilot, or so we think, after she has some words with the pilot. And Niall freaks out a little bit because now there's nobody, there's a dead pilot, and Andy's like, I can pilot the plane, so maybe you should unlock me. And so they do that, and after she unlocks her, Andy makes the quip. There's a lot of quips in this movie, a lot of good back and forth, a lot of good little lines. And Andy's like, well, clearly you don't speak Russian because I told the pilot to play dead. And then the pilot's not dead. He's piloting the plane. And then we have a pretty big action set piece.
Yeah, it's a nice little close combat fight between the two of them. Andy's kind of testing her out. And Niall is... she's like the younger sibling who just finally loses their shit. And just won't stop fighting even though they're totally outgunned.
Not necessarily outgunned, but doesn't know how to fight smartly. Is that even the right phrasing? Doesn't have good strategy, we'll say. She's got lots of energy and anger, but not a lot of strategy. And Andy's got patience and experience.
Yes, Andy has been... practicing for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and knows how to fight dirty.
Is it dirty, though?
Yeah, well, the thing with the arm is pretty dirty.
Well, but again, if you can't die, what's off limits if you can't die, or if you reanimate?
Anything that results with a bone sticking out of the body, just yeesh.
Would you rather that or get stabbed?
I think I'd rather get stabbed.
I mean, I don't know. I would rather neither, actually. I mean, none of those sound appealing to me at all. But I don't know. Ugh. I imagine being shot wouldn't feel very good either. None of this would be pleasant. None of these instances would be pleasant. So I can't imagine. But you're right. When you made the point earlier, like feeling all of that would just be... I don't even know how you would... At a certain point, you would just... I don't know how you get used to that. I mean, I've injured myself enough throughout the years that I can't imagine having to willingly subject myself to repeated injury. My accidental injuries are bad enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that they never really dwell on with, like, super-powered beings in comic books and movies who can heal really quickly. They don't explore how they likely can still feel a lot of pain, regardless of whether they heal quickly or not.
And they end up in Paris, but really not Paris, outside of Paris, right? Kind of Paris, but not really. It's a fairly remote-ish area, whereas one of their, I think she called it Safe House Charlie. And
right.
The five of them now are in this little area, and Niall gets introduced to Booker and
Joe and Nikki.
And there seems to be some camaraderie and some team building and some interaction, and they're talking back and forth. And
Niall has a whole lot of exposition right here.
Yeah, but it wasn't forced. It was good exposition.
It was. The whole story about Quinn. It was interesting. Yeah. It was interesting, but I do think that was a little forced. That was a little clumsy about. You know, just having Andy sitting in the other room looking pensively while the rest of them share her story. That was the only part of the movie that made me roll my eyes a little bit. But even then, you know, getting the backstory is, at this point, is super interesting.
I just assume that Andy didn't like to talk about it, and so she didn't. And so that's why they take up the mantle.
Yeah.
Because Andy doesn't seem to like to talk about anything.
No, she won't even admit how old she is.
Except when she does start talking, she does talk. So she has a very strange relationship with wanting to communicate. She doesn't want to talk up until the point where she does. I'm not sure where the switch is. Regardless, Niall is still struggling.
I imagine there are several members of the Anderson family who can relate to that.
Yes. Guilty as charged. Niall is still kind of in denial. That was a poor phrasing. Niall is still not zen with the fact that she is immortal. And she makes the point to, I think, was it Booker? Where she says, I have people that, you know, that care about me that are going to worry. And you get backstory about Niall's family and her dad dying and why she became a Marine. And I think that's where Booker and her have the interaction where he's like, you're going to live out everybody. And that's what sucks.
Yeah, Booker's kind of dark.
And they talk about how Andy found Quinn. But they do make the point, you're right. They have the exhibition where they talk about when there is somebody that's new, they dream about each other up until the point, although they're not really dreams, they're like locating visions. They're almost like, you know, dowager visions, right? They dream about each other up until the point where they're actually in physicality with one another, and then that stops.
Yes.
But Andy goes outside. She's brooding. And Niall went out first, right?
Yeah, Niall just wants to go home still. Right. She just still wants to go home. She wants to call her family.
And Andy goes out to see her. And as the two of them are out and behind whatever they're at, there is an ambush of Merrick's people taking the safe house. And there's some pretty big carnage going on. And Andy goes in to check it out. And Andy and Niall go back and they see that Joe and Nikki are gone. And Booker is there, but he is obliterated. Blown to pieces.
Yeah. It turns out he took a grenade right to the stomach, right?
Ooh. Yeah, that's what it looked like. Again, we have another action set piece. Booker gets revived in much horror. And Andy tells Booker to take Niall and get ready for the signal. And then she trods off. And Niall's like, well, what's the signal? And Booker's like, well, you'll know the signal. And so that becomes kind of a running joke.
Mm-hmm.
But then Andy goes and murders all of the mercenaries.
Yeah, they only show a little bit of it, but the destruction she leaves in her wake is very impressive.
Oh yeah, and she breaks out her little onk axe or whatever it was. It was impressive. No, but again, nice action set piece, and. Then, boom, that's the signal. And Niall and Booker and her head to the car. And Niall is looking at all of the carnage. And so they go drive to...
And it makes her just want to get the fuck out of there.
Oh, yeah.
She does not want any part of this anymore.
They drive to the safe cave, Andy's little sanctuary, as it were. And there's some banter back and forth. Booker's got to find where Copley is. And they're having difficulty, of course, because he's at ex-CIA, so he knows how to hide his tracks. And so there's some exposition that goes on. And Booker, as I think getting drunk at this point, as he's searching for stuff, him and Niall are discussing things. And Andy says she's going to go out for a while. As she's realized that she's not healing.
Yeah, very disconcerting because they had described how one of the first people Andy found was a dude. I forget his name. I think it started with an L. And then one day he just stopped healing and died.
Which was really traumatic because it was her and Quinn and this other gentleman.
Yes, and they have no idea why or when to expect it. It's just something that happens.
And Andy goes to like a drugstore. I'm assuming it's in France, although the woman spoke English. Or they're both speaking French and supposedly we can just understand them. But the kind of the, I think they try and misdirect you into believing that the clerk is eyeing Andy suspiciously because she's either going to call the police or she has called the police. I think that's what they want you to believe. Because she's watching Andy as Andy's running through the store, not running, as Andy's shopping through the store for all kinds of gear and healing supplies, first aid kind of things. And finally she makes it up to the counter and she's being checked out by the clerk. And she asks the clerk if there's a bathroom, and then she says, no, but we do have like a storeroom, and then asks her if she needs help. And I think the direction that you're supposed to take from that is that the clerk believes that Andy is some kind of abused spouse. Is that right. What you got?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I got from that. And so there's some banter back and forth with the clerk and Andy, who doesn't think much of humanity at this point. I think there's a theme a couple times where she says, I don't know why we're doing this anymore because nobody seems to care what we're doing. This world is just getting worse. She keeps repeating things of that theme. And this clerk, though, is helping her for no apparent reason, right? Just out of the kindness of being kind, being a human being. And she tells Andy, you know, I'm helping you today. Maybe tomorrow you'll help someone else. So kind of pay it forward kind of thing. And so Andy kind of gets stitched up, healed a little bit through first aid products, not through her process, not through her immortality, which seems to be gone. So then we head back. She heads back to the cave. And the three of them, they find where Copley is. The three of them set out for that. And then Niall says, nah. When they stop, Niall says, nope, I'm out. And Booker takes off for the woods, and Andy and Niall are having a conversation. And Andy's like, fine, all right, you know, go. Here, take the car, take the guns, just dump the guns and whatever. Bye. Peace out. And Andy and Booker head to Copley's area. And Niall takes off. And so Niall makes it to somewhere. I'm not sure where. Some kind of train station, maybe. And so she's going through and collecting all the guns and looking at some things. And Niall unloads one of the weapons, assuming she wants to make sure there's no round in the chamber. And she grabs the guns, takes the clip out, and there's no ammunition in it. Which she then flashbacks to realize that was the gun that Booker gave Andy. A gun with no bullets in it.
This is a very troubling development, because up to this point, I really liked Booker.
I know, me too. I thought, no. And then,
great hair, too.
He had a good personality. He was likable. Yeah. He was seemingly a good guy. And Andy and Booker are in Copley's place, and
they find Copley.
And Booker basically injures Andy.
So that shoots her in the side.
So that basically she can be collected by Merrick. Except that now we realize, and Andy realizes, Booker's now betrayed them. So she's upset. But she also is she seems kind of resigned that she's dying. So I think it's hard to tell, but it's almost like she's given up at this point. And Booker realizes when she says, I can't heal, then he is absolutely beside himself because he didn't know, because she's not going to tell anybody.
Yeah, and ostensibly he just killed her.
Right. But he's also betrayed the Brotherhood.
Yep.
So now Merrick shows up and collects them all and takes them all. And Copley's kind of starting to see that Merrick is a little crazy. No, actually, he's batshit crazy. And he's really not going to do anything ethical or moral or anything that Copley had idealistically thought Merrick was going to do. And this is all about Merrick and money and control and power. And all Copley wanted was something that would end suffering for people. That's kind of Copley's purported altruism, except he goes about it in a very shitty way.
Yeah, he's got some sort of backstory with a wife who died from cancer that didn't really resonate. Like the whole Copley deal was unnecessary. But
yeah,
it was fine. I like the actor, so I didn't mind it that much.
Yeah, it was a poor backstory. I think they could have done better. But again, it was inconsequential for the, well, I mean, it was just a plot point, right? But we see Copley has his little timeline boards. And you see that Andy is everywhere. She's rippled through history, as it were.
Yes.
And so they have some exposition. And I think you're supposed to take from it that the group of them have done things for a great long time, longer than anybody even may know. And they don't even remember how long it's been. They just know it's been a long time. And Merrick takes everybody back to the lab, I guess. And Copley's at his place when Niall shows up. And Niall says, "Dude, what's going on? What the hell?" And Copley kind of starts to say what's going on. And Niall sees what Andy's accomplished through Copley's timelines. And this is where Niall kind of comes into the fold.
Right.
Because she hadn't really seen the purpose up to this point of why this would even matter to her. Why would she want to do this? Because so far she doesn't believe everything that she's seen is even for the good. All she sees is a bunch of murder and mayhem and killing. She doesn't get the point. But now she's seeing the evidence of what Andy and the group have accomplished over the centuries.
She didn't see it because Andy is so disillusioned at this point that all Andy sees is that the world is getting worse and that all their efforts have been for naught. So she's not even making an attempt to sell Niall on why it's important that they do what they do. I think is also why she just lets her go. Like, she doesn't even put up a fight when Niall wants to leave.
Yeah. I think she's tired of raising kids.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of what it felt like. Like, I'm tired of you damn teenagers. Fine. Do you want to go? Go. Be gone with you. And Copley kind of caves and gives Niall his hard sell on his wife and why he thought he was doing it for altruistic reasons. And turns out he realizes Merrick is a bad guy. And he tells Niall that he's going to help her get into the building and he'll help her out so that she can rescue the people. And of course, cause Andy's actually dying. And so Niall's like, oh, damn it. So they head to the Merrick building facility concern lab, whatever. At this point, Joe and Nikki are being experimented upon. Andy and Booker are now strapped in and have arrived. The doctor woman thing, I've seen her in. She was in, most recently, she was in the National Geographic Mars series. Mission to Mars, I think it was.
She was very cold.
Oh, she's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're just brutal experiments on Joe and Nikki. Right?
Yeah. That doctor's probably already killed them like a dozen times, right?
Oh, it just can't. Oh, it's just terrible. But you do have, I mean, you have a lot of, you know, again, the banter between Joe and Nikki, that whole timeline of their romance is hilarious to me.
Yeah. And that he's not my boyfriend speech. That was beautiful. Oh,
yeah, it was. Yeah, it's a little over the top.
Very over the top. But yeah, it was great. It
was making me uncomfortable.
That actor sold the shit out of it.
Oh yeah, no, I believed him. I believe both of them. Niall tells Copley, like, you stay here. You've done your part. Out of the two of us, I'm the one that can't die. So you stay here. I am going to go take care of this shit. And she goes up in the elevator and starts the war.
Starts killing fools.
And they have a lot of, again, this is another action set piece where there's a lot of shooting and bludgeoning and a lot of, again, there's quippy lines and, there's a lot of back and forth, and there's way too much to go into too much exposition, but there are some good lines, and it culminates into
what I like about this extended action scene is they all now know that Andy can't heal. She's mortal. And what I really appreciated is because they did such a good job making, because there's so much action in this movie, they did a really good job making every big set piece creative and different. You know, they never do the same thing twice, which I think is really hard considering how much action there is in this movie. And in this scene in particular, because they all recognize that Andy can't heal, they incorporate, you know, like, taking all of the bullets in front of her and into their fight choreography, which is a little fun wrinkle they added to this last one.
So they're kind of a mobile bodyguard group for her.
Yes.
But she's still fighting. Andy's still fighting.
Yeah.
And she's given 125% as far as I'm concerned.
She's still going through the door first.
Yeah. And she's the mortal one at this point, but she's still leading them. Even being surrounded by them, she's still leading them.
Also, she might just want to die.
Well, and there is some of that. Because there's some latent guilt, I think, that you're supposed to believe she has over Quinn, right? So.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's latent. I think it's overt.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
So at this point in the movie, though, I got a little irritated. Because they're in a big lab with things like, oh, big flammable vats of stuff and liquid nitrogen. Shooting around a bunch of that stuff is probably going to end poorly. Just saying. But you do get the satisfying moment where they kill the Merrick's main bodyguard dude.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, all the stuff with him was good.
Yeah. And then at the kind of one of the at the apex, Niall and Andy and Merrick are all in a room together, and Andy helps Niall remember the fake out on the plane, asks her if she speaks Russian, and they have some good back and forth, and Merrick ends up with Andy's sword in his neck. Not quite dead yet, because he's then going to try and get Andy, where Niall then takes him out all the way to the ground, 15 floors down, in a very gruesome kind of end for Merrick. Also kind of a gruesome moment for Niall too, by the way, because when the team catches up with her.
You can hear all her bones snapping back into place.
So bad.
Yeah, here's my one nitpick about the movie. I think at that height, there would have been way more blood. I think Merrick would have just been spaghetti.
Well, did you see him? I don't think I saw him.
I just think Niall, I think she would have landed and turned him into goop. She should look like a newborn.
I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe he set one of the airbags off and he gets surrounded by one of the side curtains or something.
Maybe.
I mean, it looked like a Volvo, so those are super safe. They're like crumple zones.
Yeah. Not a big deal. Not something I even thought about the first time I watched the movie.
Yeah, I didn't think about it at all. So, and then they flee. They get the hell out of there as the police and whatnot come to the big crime scene at Merrick Labs. And the four of them, the five of them are at a bar, and Booker's outside while the four of them are talking, and Andy comes out to talk to Booker and says, yeah, we've decided on your punishment, and you're exiled for 100 years. Which, at that point, I'm doing the math in my head, and I'm like, well, Andy will be dead in 100 years.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, this is rough. And Booker says, you know, it's better than I expected, but worse than I'd hoped, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think he'd expected much worse, obviously. But he's now exiled, and the four of them now, Andy, Joe and Nikki, and Niall, are the team. And Booker's on his own for 100 years. And so as they're kind of regrouping, they go to Copley and have a little discussion with him, which is where they show Andy all the things that she's done, because she may not realize that while she saved one or two people thousands of years ago, that one or two people has turned into hundreds of thousands of people now through the generations. And so her little tiny ripple in the past has a huge wave, tidal wave of people in the future. And so her little things that she's done has resonated forward. And so everything she's done has been meaningful. And they basically tell Copley as his way to amend that he's now going to be their ringleader, right?
He's going to be the Charlie to their angels.
I was just going to say that.
He's going to be the Oracle to their birds of prey.
Very good. And he's going to be the Alfred.
Yeah, that too.
And then we cut to...
He's going to be the Ned to their Spider-Man. That'll resonate with you in about 12 more movies.
Very good. Agent Coulson. Sorry. Then the final scene of the movie is we see Booker stumbling into his apartment drunk. He can't even hold on to his bottle of liquor. And he goes into his apartment, and Quinn's waiting for him.
Very creepy.
Dun, dun, dun. And she doesn't look very happy.
Nope. Cue the sequel.
Yeah. And so this is where I wrote, oh, this was meant to be serialized. Again, I still had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the movie ends. So, ta-da. Do you have any other parts that you want to discuss about the movie?
I'll just say I thought Charlize Theron was great. She has been killing it in the last few movies that we've seen her in. She is fantastic. From Atomic Blonde to Bombshell to this, I'm really impressed with her. I also saw her in the movie with Seth Rogen. Was it The Contender? And that movie and both of their performances in that movie were way better than they should have been. So I'm very impressed with her. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. This is a really fun pick by you, even if it was inadvertent.
Completely.
I'm glad you made it. It was a fun watch. It's got some weird emotional baggage just because of you know, like how stressful it was when it first came out. But it's a fun movie, and I'm glad it's on Netflix so that you can just pop it on anytime you want.
Sorry, I got distracted by a thing. So I'm, you know, this is an A movie to me.
Wait a minute. You gave Winter Soldier a B.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
I call shenanigans on your grading system.
Hey, I'm honest. I like what I like. I don't what I don't. I don't know what to tell you. There's no shenanigans.
No, I reject that Winter Soldier is a B and Old Guard is an A. Reject
it. This movie had action. It kept me captivated. I cared about the characters. I cared about the story. I wasn't bored. I didn't tap my fingers. And I was surprised. I didn't have that with Winter Soldier.
Old Guard doesn't have Bucky.
Yeah. That's not a bad thing.
I might never forgive you for this.
Well, I can live with that. I've disappointed you before. This won't be the last time. We've got That's much true. More in the future. Don't worry about it. You gotta lower your expectations a little.
I have very high expectations of all members of my family.
Well, that will serve you very poorly.
I have not learned my lesson yet.
So, anyway, sorry. This isn't a movie as far as I'm concerned. I think it's good for all people.
Your grading system is now dead to me.
All right. Well, you know, it's my system, though. You don't have to subscribe to it. I mean, you tell me, was it worth it? You've seen it twice now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's worth a rewatch, even. It's a fun movie.
I agree. I look forward to rewatching it. I'm looking forward to the sequel. That's how I can tell you it's better than Winter Soldier. I don't care about the next movie of Winter Soldier, of Captain America. That's the difference. I have no investment in it.
Now you're just hurting my feelings on purpose.
No. I'm glad you love it. I'm glad that you're such a fan. I just don't share that. It's just not, it isn't, again, it doesn't appeal to me.
I'm putting the Winter Soldier back on the calendar for a rewatch.
Oh, you just want to torture me. Well, I mean, your pick is coming up in a couple weeks, so, you know.
I was thinking, when you and I did the sort of the Redux episode where we each picked a movie that we had watched with Eric, but not with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking it might be fun to do something like that again with the combination of the three of us now.
Sure.
But I haven't fully wrapped my head around the logistics of that.
Well, I think, do you have some movie ideas in mind?
No, I hadn't gotten that far, but okay. In my mind, since there are now, we have three different combinations of twos of us, I think each of us could pick a twofer episode where we swap movies. So that would be like three consecutive two-hander episodes. Might be a lot.
We got plenty. We got nothing but time, kind of.
It's true. Also, you and I have to do the most essential Knight Rider episodes at some point too.
Oh yeah, I gotta find that. Where'd I put it? The audience can't see, but you can now see all of the shit in the background of my office is put away. All my stuff is clean. Ta-da!
Very nice. It's
just all stacked in the closet.
It took you 9 years less than, and counting, 9 years and counting less than it's taken me for my office.
Well, again, it's all just stacked in the closet. It's not dealt with. It's just shoved away. So are we done discussing the movie? We're on to housekeeping?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Housekeeping. So Cousin Debbie and her husband Jeff were here visiting. They came Wednesday.
How are they?
Good. They're down to see our aunt, her mother, and her dad, who is not doing so well. So they're dealing with some family medical personal things. But it was good to see them. We had dinner and I made cheesecake, so we had dinner and dessert. But in the meantime, this week it was frantically cleaning my house to have the first company I've ever had over. And it was a lot of, I have to put all the shit somewhere. And it got to the point where I'm like, I don't care where it goes. It just has to get hidden. So we managed to make it. But then I thought, of course, because I have nothing but time before people come over, right? I decided that since I was going to have all the shit put away, I was going to recondition and then polish my hardwood floors. So
you are ambitious.
I completed it though.
Nice.
I got it done. Boy, that's a lot of work. I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, boy, that was a lot of work. So that was something it needs to get done probably a couple every 2 to 3 months just for the polish. Well, mostly just because it really protects it, but it looks really good. And it also makes me be responsible enough to actually clean stuff. So I'm trying to be adult.
The shit you have to do when you own it.
I don't know if I discussed, I vacuumed a couple. Well, I guess now it's been a month. It's probably been a month ago. Anyway, I vacuumed and I hadn't really been vacuuming much because we'd had boxes everywhere and we just moved in and it's new carpet and, you know, we're not wearing shoes in the house, stuff like that. So we're being very careful about the environment. And then I vacuumed and it filled up the vacuum with stuff and I was horrified. So now I'm like, oh, crap, I'm going to have to vacuum like every couple of weeks. God damn it. So there's that. We are living, I know that we're living more a country life, but it's now spider time. So it's been a plethora of spiders. That's not fun. I'm not enjoying that at all.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So I keep thinking, oh, there's a smudge on the wall. Oh, no, it's a big spider.
You're going to have to get a cat.
No, I'm good. No, I'm not going to that extreme. I'll just get one of those bug vacuum things. Anyway, so again, it was good to see family. It's good to reconnect. I haven't seen Debbie in, it's been, I don't know. I was probably in single digits if I saw her, they're planning on moving out this way at some point, in the next, I think the next couple, 3 to 5 years.
Oh, wow.
So
I don't think I've ever seen her.
Probably not. You remember David, or maybe not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He came and stayed with us for a while one summer.
I remember him very well. So they're planning on moving out at some point. They're not going to move to Portland. They're looking someplace more affordable, of course, because Portland is expensive, which is why I'm no longer living in Portland. So I think they're going to move more south. Salem, Corvallis, Albany. Hmm. Which is about an hour-ish south of Portland. More affordable. A little... I don't know about the weather. It's going to be closer to the mountains. I think it's going to be colder, but more... I don't know. Anyway, not my problem. But they're going to be moving at some point. And then I think Jeff's brother... Is his brother... I'm mixing it all up now. So this is what happens when I don't take notes. Someone in Jeff's family just got a position at Reed College and is moving. They just sold their house in Iowa. And so they're moving here, they're moving to Portland somewhere to an apartment and they're going to look for a house somewhere. So I offered to help them judge areas where they look at houses. Because as an outsider, you know, you might find a house that looks great, except you don't want to live in that neighborhood.
Sure.
And I lived in Portland for 20 years, so I have some, well, more than that. So I have some experience, so I absolutely offered to help. So that would be on the horizon. Otherwise, things are just going on.
Nice.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. So it was just Eric and I last week, or was it you and Eric last week?
I think it was you two.
Yeah, okay. So you're unaware of the happenstance that occurred last week.
Oh, wait, no, it was the three of us, but I think I jumped off early, right?
Ah, that could be. Oh yeah, because it was Winter Soldier, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, yeah. You jetted out. Did you hear about Jesse's trauma?
No. What's going on with him?
It was. Was it one last Wednesday? Was it a week ago? It was Wednesday or Thursday. Anyway, one of the days last week, Jesse went to work. I'm working from home. I got a phone call. He's like, I have a flat tire and I need you to bring me the jack from the garage so I can fix my car and get to work.
How far away was he?
Not far. Not far. He hit a pothole and I said, well, how fast were you going? He goes, oh, I don't know, 5 or 10 miles an hour. I'm like, was it a big pothole? He goes, it was a very big pothole. I'm like, all right. So I'm assuming it's hyperbole. Or he was going like 80 miles an hour into a pothole. So I'm working, but I'm like, okay, I'm going to take off work. I'm working from home, luckily. So about 12 minutes down the road, bring the jack, and he's, you know, he's like, he'd put the stupid flat on to get where he was at, but it shredded. So he had to put the old tire back on. And then he limped it home. I took him to work, which is 45 minutes each way.
That's love.
Twice a day. So that's, you know, basically 180. So that's 3 hours of my life a day tied up in commute. So anyway, I said, well, we need to figure out, you know, you need to get tires. Well, I'll just buy 2 tires. I'm like, price for tires at Costco is going to be just as cheap as if you buy 2 tires, eventually you're going to need the other 2. Just do the adult thing. Buy 4 tires, get them mounted at Costco, be done with it. You need to check the tire you have, make sure that your rim's okay, and then if it is, we'll go from there. Rim's not okay, rim's cracked.
Mm.
So I had to order a rim. Of course, he has like a unicorn Acura, so he has special rims and special tires. So
it's not the really thin, the low profile tires, is it?
I don't know. They weren't ungodly expensive. I mean, it was my tires are expensive on my SUV. Those effers are, I don't. Yeah. Anyway, I won't be replacing them with the same tires. I will tell you that now. When I find out how much they cost, I will not be getting the same tires. But I digress. So he had to order a new rim. Mm-hmm. But we ordered the tires and we got an appointment for Costco. And so I've been driving him back and forth every day to work.
How many days is this now?
Well, it's been a week. So,
oh man,
today's Friday, right? By the way, I was on vacation this week. Not really. Not really vacation. I'm spending 3 hours a day in the car, but look, I'm happy to do it. You know, things, as I told Jesse, things could be worse. Nobody died. It's all fixable. Like, this is inconvenient and it sucks and it's awful, but it's fixable. No big deal. His tires are here. The wheel is in my garage. The tires are at Costco because we had to order them because Costco doesn't stock them. But the tires are at Costco. His appointment is on Monday because he's off on Monday and Tuesday. So those are his normal days off for Monday and Tuesday. But we have to get his car out there on the wounded tire with the broken rim. So it's going to be a fun experience to drive the car because we are not close to the Costco. So it's going to be a harrowing trip. Well, it'll be a lot of inflating the tire and driving until the tire needs pumped up, and then we'll pull off and then inflate it and drive. And, you know, because we figured the rim's already, the rim's ruined. It's not going to get more ruined as long as we don't like shred his suspension. So it'll be what it is. It'll be an experience. I'm just looking forward to Monday afternoon when I don't have to deal with this anymore. But I have 2 days. I have tomorrow and Sunday. So Saturday and Sunday left. But you know, the practical upshot is, even though I've been getting up, I still do sick calls when I'm on vacation, when I'm only on vacation for a couple of days, because it's too much work to transition all of the staff to call somebody else for a couple of days. Because invariably people don't get the message and they call the wrong person, and it happens at 5:30 in the morning, and then they text me. So I just do it. There's no point in not doing it for me. So I've been taking sick calls. So I've still been getting up, but then I immediately have to leave to take him to work, and you know, and then it's an hour and a half, and then I come home and putter around the house for a couple hours, and then it's time to go back and pick him up because I have to leave 45 minutes before he's off, and then so it's been back and forth. I'll be glad when this is over.
I bet.
But I'm like, okay. These are my brownie points, though. Like, these are my get-out-of-jail-free points. Like,
no kidding.
Remember this. But the house, my main living floor is immaculate, ready for company. So whenever you guys are ready.
Very good.
Although I think the parents are going to be the company, but I have to buy a bed for them first, so.
They can sleep on the floor. They're fine.
No, I don't want to hear that. No, I wouldn't put him on the floor, but I don't think they'll want to sleep in my room either, because the dog will not appreciate being locked out of the bedroom. So, but we're gonna have a guest room, so we'll have a guest room. But the nice thing about having had Connie and Jeff here was that, or not Connie, oh my God, Debbie and Jeff, having Debbie and Jeff here was that it forced me to clean the house. It forced me to get all the shit done. So that was a good thing.
That is a great thing about company.
Very motivating. Mm-hmm. And then panic attack inducing. Oh my God, I got to get all this shit done. So there's nothing like a resolute deadline to really kick you in the ass, right?
Yeah. And then everybody leaves and you look around, you're like, man, this house is nice.
I know. It's all clean. Like, what the hell happened? Yes. So that's good. So, yay. I heard you guys have had a little bit of snow.
Oh God. We've also had, I saw this on the news the other day. We've had the second longest streak of, days below freezing ever.
Oh, you mean below zero?
Below 32.
Oh, okay. That doesn't. So. I don't know. That doesn't, for some reason, that doesn't impress me.
Well, it articulated something that I've been feeling.
Oh.
Like, I'm just tired of the fucking cold.
That's March. I guess it is. Is it, I haven't lived there in a while. Is this time of March normally breakup season, right?
We should be starting it. Yeah. We usually get hit with like one last big dumping of snow. But it should be getting up into like the 40s during the day, so it should melt off pretty quickly. Yeah, it should be all wet and nasty, but no, it's
climate change, my friend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we have so much snow out in Willow. It's I think we might do the Golden Gate Bridge thing, and just by the time all the snow melts, it might start snowing again.
Are you talking about painting the Golden Gate Bridge?
Yes.
My concern with all that snow is that water has to go somewhere when it melts. Hopefully it doesn't go into your house.
I think we're okay there. The only spot that I'm concerned about is our back door, and I actually keep the snow away from it, get the snowblower back out there, and as much as I can, push it back so that it'll all go down the hill when it melts into the lake.
Right off the grade.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had some weird weather here. It was really nice, and then it was like stormy and hail and rain. And then it's really nice, and then stormy and hail and rain. I'll have to find the video and send it to you if I can find it. But it was beautiful and gorgeous. It was sunny, and within 2 minutes it was pitch black. It was like a Stephen King movie. Pitch black, thunder, lightning, hail, just absolute torrential downpour. And I thought, oh, this is not good. This is, as I watch the water rushing down the street, because I'm at the bottom of an inclined plane, right? So watching all of this flood of water come down the street towards my house, off into the creek that's yonder. And I thought, oh man. So it's been crazy. So hopefully.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow. And maybe ramble, that's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you.